Congratulations!
You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast with me, Kate Rhodes.
And me, Mel Prest.
Maysoon is in Hawaii right now. Ooh. And they are undergoing a hurricane disaster.
Oh no.
I don't think it's that bad, but it is worrisome. So we're going to send all our positive vibes to Maysoon. Okay, here's the deal. We're talking to Mel Prest, and you are a world-renowned abstract painter. Well, you work in abstraction. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
It's interesting how people kind of connect with that word or not. Mm-hmm. Even if to the outsider it seems super abstract, you know, sometimes that's not really jamming.
Right.
Okay. And okay, so I read an interview you did, and you where I know, right? And you mentioned, okay, so you went to RISD, right?
I did, okay. Yeah. Which was like the best thing ever in my life.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Because you're from the Midwest, right?
Yes. I grew up in Minneapolis. And yeah, I went to the same private school for 12 years. And I didn't relate really to anyone at that school. And I was really lucky. I had like a art studio in the art classroom for 4 years, and I like interned with an artist when I was in ninth grade. And
wow,
we had an aesthetics class, and we read Walter Benjamin.
Holy
and
shit.
Wrote, you know, yeah, like, which was all so great as a teenager, because yeah, nobody, you know, there were only a couple of us. And then I had never even heard of RISD, and my teacher was like, oh, where are you going to go to college? And I was like, I don't know. She's like, well, you know, RISD is really good, but you would hate it. It's really competitive. And so, like, of course, I was like, oh, I got to apply. And then I was lucky and I got in. And it was life changing to be suddenly around all the other freaks and weirdos.
I read that you had a crew cut.
I did.
That's
I have pictures.
So
I had a couple, actually. Yeah. I had one in college. I had one in high school. Yeah, totally. And in college, I had just shaved my head completely. And then, yeah, it was great. I had a mohawk.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah, I have the pictures to prove it. I'll show you after the interview.
What were you wearing? Like leather jackets?
No. It was like, you know, this was the 80s. I was like working at a garden nursery store, like in high school, and like, you know, just didn't have a lot of money. So I just went to thrift stores.
Hell yeah.
So you'd wear like combat boots and
yes.
like, you know, like whatever.
Just you were a punk.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you still identify that way?
I don't know. I think like, yeah, maybe.
Fuck
maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know what is, you know, like it's punk's gotten eaten up and spat out. When I was teaching at State, I remember there was a kid who was wearing like a Dead Kennedy shirt.
Hell yeah.
You know, and this was like, I don't know, 2010 or something. And I was like, oh, that was my first punk rock show like that I stage dived at. And he looked at me like his brain had just fallen out on the floor. Like, because, you know, I'm old, right? So it was just like, wait, you know about the Dead Kennedys? And it was just like, yeah. Like,
of course.
Yeah, you're wearing your parents' shirt. Yeah, so anyway.
Really good.
Yeah.
Okay, and so what I really wanted to get into was your transition from representational work to abstract work.
Oh, yeah.
So was that like a graduate school shift or?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because it wasn't intentional. Like, I was really in love with all the, like, Lucian Freud, and I painted very, like, you know, I spent a lot of time painting the figure, and I liked that sort of construction of things. And then when I finished school, I had a studio in a basement in like Boston, and then in Providence and in Philadelphia, and I just was painting from like childhood photographs. And then when I moved out here in 95, I was still painting that way, and I applied to Mills. And at the same time, my mom had been diagnosed with brain cancer.
Oh, shit.
And so, yeah, it was fucking hell. But yeah, and so like it just was weird to like be going with like back to Minneapolis and seeing her. And then, you know, all of the stuff around family started to shift. And so as she was losing language, I was like putting a lot of like, the figures like kind of left my paintings, and I started using a lot of language in paintings that was obliterated by like thick paint and color. And then that I sort of realized was like, I was doing these big, like thick oil paintings, and it was like very sort of not me, you know, like I was just like, oh, this is like, you know, the heroic 80s painting or like this very masculine kind of painting. And I just felt like I was using other people's brushstrokes. And so also during this time, I read the Robert Irwin biography, like Seeing is Forgetting, the name of the thing one sees.
Yes.
By Lawrence Weschler. And that was like amazing because I felt like he talked about his transition from being somebody who was like good at drawing and painting, which was not me. I was not like good at that. I was something I had to work at. But for him, it was like super easy. And so he, yeah, he kind of talked about like stripping everything down and like including his studio. And it's like, I think it's a good book. I think it's very dated and there's a lot of shitty masculinity in it. But, you know, if you can like sort of cull out the things that don't matter, in that, I think it's a wonderful idea about trying to find the thing that is real to you. And so for me, I was like, oh, I just want to eliminate the brushstroke. And so that's when I started working with line and color. And that's where I've been staying since like 2000.
Damn.
Yeah, yeah.
26 years.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like, you know, my husband is somebody who does a lot of different kinds of artwork, and that's real to him. And for me, it's like, I want to just keep digging that deep well and find what's there.
Totally. And I mean, there's been like a shift in, like, you can tell like that there's evolution happening over the course of your work.
It's just super slow. I mean, it's like, I remember the year when the line started crossing, you know, like it's just, but you know, the thing is that like, I guess that's really just me, you know, like I like so many different things, but it feels fake to try to just go like, oh, now I'm doing like this thing or that thing, you know? And for me, it's like, you know, it embodies like Joseph Albers or color field painting or minimalism or Agnes Martin or,
Totally.
You know, like, just some of my, you know, sort of, disparate influences, but still feels like my own.
Totally.
Yeah, yeah.
Would I be right to say that the process is a big part of what you do?
Yeah.
Do you have kind of like systems?
No, that's the funny thing is I feel like, I have a way of working, but then the system is always like improvisational, I guess. So I work with the shape of the space, so like usually square panels, and then layer lots of color till I find the color that's resonates in some way, like, you know, like feels like a scent or feels like a flower or has some sort of, like I have an attachment to it somehow. And then, I work with lines and then the lines are never the same. Like they're just, it's like a double zero brush. And that's it. And sometimes the first layer is about acknowledging the space, so like there'll be an X or it'll be divided into like uneven, you know, like pie pieces or whatever, but then it's improvisational and, you know, like I fuck up a lot, and so then that but that's like the fun part is because then you're like, oh, how do I resolve this? I feel like I'm always stretching a sweater, you know, or like I don't cook. I'm really bad at cooking. But if you cook and you're like, oh, this is really acidic, and then like I add a little sugary thing to it. So yeah, I try to feel the whole painting at once.
Damn. Okay, so you're like, well, okay. Then I also saw a video where
I'm so honored that you like cyberstalked me. I'm really like, I'm just honored to be here.
Oh my God. Well, thank you. We're honored to have you.
No, it's like amazing. You guys are amazing.
Jesus.
Thank you.
Bless. And you have like color charts with all the different paints and stuff.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Are you like, what's up with that?
Oh, well.
You're like referencing, like, are you kind of like doing a little mental calculation before you get started, or it's all you're figuring it out on the panel, or?
Yeah, no, I mean, those are like for fun to do, you know, and sometimes, you know, like my palette, I probably have 6 different blues, but only 1 green. So it's like that, those blues will do all sorts of different things when you add another color to it. So sometimes that's what it's about, but I don't try to go and match anything unless I like bonk something really badly in studio and I have to kind of patch it, which is like, yeah. So no, those are like ideas or practices that hopefully like will come back in my studio, but I don't refer to them and be like, oh yeah, I gotta make that one like green number 54. Because I don't know how to do that. I mean, I know how to do that, but not for like a painting, you know, because all the paint is always, you know, talking to each other. So sometimes it, sometimes it's just not what you think is going to happen. Like, and I also feel like that's just me in general. It's like you make this plan and then everything goes completely wrong. But you know, it's not that it's wrong. It's just doing something that you didn't expect. And then you're like, oh, okay. So how do I work with that? So yeah, planning out like what the color is and then plugging that in somewhere is not what I'm capable of doing.
Sure enough. I was just talking to a painter recently who has like a visceral hatred of phthalo green.
Oh, interesting.
What do you say to that?
Oh, it's so funny because, yeah, phthalo green is the only green I have actually in
my... I like it.
I do too. You know...
Okay. I love all the phthalo colors.
I do too. I love like the synthetic colors so much because they're transparent. And so like you can get all sorts of really good effects. And then also they're so highly concentrated that like you just put a little bit and then it goes like...
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think about phthalo green? Like, tell me.
I'm okay. I mean, I really like phthalo blue. I think that's like kind of my favorite paint blue.
Uh-huh.
Because you put a little white with that. It's making some great, like, whatever, robin's egg or whatever that is.
Right.
And then phthalo green I don't use as much because I'll just mix phthalo blue with some yellow and get some green out of that. Yeah, I don't know. I like it. And then that same painter also had an issue with alizarin crimson, which I really like.
Uh-huh.
I want it, like, I'll see that and I want to eat it.
Oh, interesting.
Or like put it on like lipstick.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to think, what color do I feel like that about? That's like straight out of it. I love the quinacridones.
Oh, I don't know those.
Oh, okay. I'm going to bring you some.
Oh,
so there's like, so basically I feel like the quinacridones and the phthalos are like friends because they're highly saturated, chemically created colors. And so like I've been doing this thing lately where it's like quinacridone magenta and phthalo green. And you can get like these amazing like violets and grays and stuff from it that are bananas and not what you would think would happen. And
whoa.
So, yeah. Anyway, next time I see you, I'm bringing you quinacridone.
Fantastic.
Magenta. Yeah. I don't know. I kind of feel like I'm less into the earth colors because they're so opaque. And I feel like you can get opacity with other colors without, without just like shutting down the painting. You know,
and you're using a lot of like really bright, like intense, flamboyant colors.
I know. It's true. I love it. I just love color energy. Like I feel it, you know, so it's like I super respond to like that feeling, you know, like for me, it's like a sound, you know, or a flavor. And so it's like, oh, like I want that. Like that does something to me inside.
Yeah. Okay, now, did you have to, like, kind of hone some kind of inner sensitivity to be able to do this kind of stuff? Because, like, I don't, like, Maysoon and I have been looking at a lot of abstract work, and I've been trying to feel things. Mm-hmm. And I've really been wanting to cry at a painting.
Oh, uh-huh.
And that hasn't really happened yet. The last thing we looked at was the Agnes Martin pictures in SF MoMA.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And, like, that was a little... We set a timer and looked at one for 15 minutes, and uh-huh. that was kind of a lot.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, do I need a meditation practice or something where I'm like really shutting off all the noise, you know, and being able to truly be present with a painting? Like, do you feel like you had to do something to get there? Or maybe it was just like your process of like how you came to abstraction, or I don't know what happened.
Maybe both. So, like, it's funny. I once went to this Ross Bleckner lecture, and he's like, you know, a super. I love his paintings, but he, and you know, people are like oohing and aahing in the questions and everything, and they're like, "What do you listen to in your studio?" And he's like, "I listen to WNYC." You know, he's just totally like, "I listen to talk radio." You know, I take phone calls, whatever. But it's true. I kind of feel like I listen to like a shit ton of audiobooks and everything, because inside I have like some, you know, I have some dude like who's just really like naggy and binary, and he's just like, don't do that, you know, don't do this. And like, I need to give him something to chew on, you know, so that I can do this other thing. And so, yeah, I listen to like tons of stuff. And that for me is like how to, you know, kind of quiet all the inner noise, is just to give it something to do so that like the other, another part of me can be working. Does that make
yeah,
sense?
Yeah, totally.
I don't mean to sound super like metaphysical, although I do feel like, you know, looking at painting or art or whatever can be a super metaphysical experience. But I also feel like it's both of you, right? Like, I'm looking at this painting while we're talking, and I'm, you know, like going in and out of feelings about it. You know, it's like been such a nice companion, you know, with you to like talk about. So I'll have in the future, I'll have like amazingly fond feelings about this painting because I have fond feelings about you.
Oh, wow.
And this experience. But it's like, anyway, I think it's a combination, you know, it's like a sundae or like a club sandwich or something, you know, it's like what you go in with. And then like, I also feel like I'm not good at like performing. So like trying to do something, like I'm going to go in and have an experience is like, I don't know. It's like, again, like for me, setting myself up for some sort of failure, you know, really it just happens or it doesn't. Like, do you feel like that's what you're supposed to be getting from an abstract painting, is like a deep experience of
yes.
like emotional? Yeah. I don't know. Some people like they get that from like, you know, like everybody gets it from where they get it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. You have cats, right?
Yes.
Do you get it from cats?
I don't know. I think I'm like trying to have like something really profound happen.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? I feel like if I'm having a certain like hormone level,
yeah.
then I will cry about how much I love my cats.
yeah.
But I don't know that it's kind of the like existential feeling that
right.
I think I'm supposed to be having, because like we have an abstract painter who's almost like our abstract correspondent, Maysoon's best friend, Sarah.
Uh-huh.
And it seems like she is really like in a relationship when she looks at like Amy Silman's work, or
uh-huh.
like,
uh-huh.
And I love Amy Silman and
right.
like all these other abstract painters, and I can look at the painting and appreciate it,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know that I'm like, it's not touching like the emotional centers necessarily
yeah.
of my brain. And I think I have an easier time with representational painting just because like you know.
Right.
I'm like, oh, that's a bunny and that's a guy and that's whatever.
Well, I feel like we've been taught to like read paintings. I mean, and especially abstraction because of like Jackson Pollock and like drawing in the air and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like this kind of like you're supposed to like read the brushstroke and feel the angst or something.
Yes, angst.
And I, but you know what I mean? And like that, like that's why like I took out the brushstrokes, right? Because it's like, We've been conditioned to like look at like you're supposed to understand it in some particular way. And I think that, you know, like painting is like all, I mean, I think good art has so many layers to it that like you'll never understand it. You just are gonna have experiences or not. And like, yeah, depending on your mood or like, yeah, the environment. Have you been to Dia?
In Beacon?
Yeah.
No. I accidentally went to Beacon, the town, one time, but I didn't know where I was.
Uh-huh. It is kind of like, yeah, out there.
You're like, I was just on a road trip with my mom, and we were like headed to Maine, and just rolled right through Beacon, looked at the river, and had a nice time in the forest.
Yeah.
But then totally missed Dia Beacon because I didn't know it was there. Yeah, but okay, they have like all the real heavy hitters like Fred Sandbach and all those guys.
Well, I think also it's just the environment is created for the work, and so that gives you more of a possibility of experiencing the work. You know, like it's hard to see, you know, like an abstract painting next to a representational painting next to an abstract painting, like, or, you know, so giving a lot of space for things. But also, like, what, I mean, I don't know what's wrong with representational painting. Like, representational painting's beautiful, and especially, like, you know, yeah, you feel these, like, landscapes or, like, you know, these tiny humans and these big spaces. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe, like, I'm so interested in the like wanting to feel like an abstract painting is going to make you cry.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm getting there.
Yeah.
You think so?
Yeah, I don't know.
I think
know.
We have like four or five more episodes where we're trying to really focus. We're going to look at well, the last painting we looked at was Atal Adnan.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we're looking at that. We're trying to look at a painting like every week and really like look at it. But it's hard, obviously, when you can't be like physically present with the work. That's a big challenge. But yeah, I don't know. I'm getting there. I think it is like kind of like what you were saying with this painting behind me. Like if you have some kind of a personal association with it. Like for instance, I worked on the Saul LeWitt wall drawings that are at SF MoMA right now. When I look at those, I get choked up because it was like, you know, I think of all the people I was working with and like, it's like, it was so intense. So, but then I'm like, is that really about the work? Because it could be about like anything where I like really loved the people I was working with, you know? So I don't know. I'm trying to have just I'm trying to be a blank slate when I go to the work. And I'm trying, like, even with that Agnes Martin painting, that was like extremely challenging to look at for 15 minutes because it was the one with the like pencil. It's a white with a pencil grid.
Yeah.
And like it was doing like optical stuff where I felt like the lines were floating and things like that.
Right.
But I wasn't, but you know, the other thing was Maysoon was running around all around me. And so that could have been distracting, but I don't know. So is it true that you were Ron Nagel's studio assistant for a while?
I was.
How did that change your relationship to abstraction?
He's just an amazing person and an amazing artist. I was really lucky to work for him and to make his molds and grind his paint. And that's a really good question. I mean, I think that... I just learned so much, like, as he would say, at the foot of the master, you know?
Hell yeah.
And, like, I loved all of the rituals and practices he had, you know, like, we would listen to certain music at, like, a certain phase in him making a work, you know?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like, I would put on, you know, he had a cassette tape, and, you know, put on the cassette tape or the put on the CD, you know, Chinatown, like during like sort of the last phases of making a piece, or like burn a certain incense and all that kind of stuff. And I feel like it just brought it back down to like, you're just with this work. And then there's all these sort of aspects that are making this work have this aura, you know, and yeah, that it's important to have all those things, you know, to use a certain brush at a certain time in the process, or yeah, like it was, yeah, like that level of working and then transcendence at the same time. But I don't know if it changed my feeling about abstraction at all.
Yeah. Do you talk to your paintings?
No, but I do. I do talk to them sometimes. Yeah. And I like touch them. And I love like the feeling that I always wanted paintings to feel alive.
Yeah.
Like that they, you know, it was always disappointing when you'd make a painting and like, you know, it feels so exciting. And then you come back to it and you're just like, oh, schlump, you know, like,
I know.
Right. And so then it's just that feeling of like, when they kind of vibrate off the walls at you and they like respond, they feel like they're in response to you.
Yeah. Your paintings especially feel like they're moving and stuff, undulating. Well,
thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I want them to be their own thing. You know?
I knew a sculptor who would play Plantasia. Do you know that one?
No.
It's like this synthesizer, like freaky, ethereal, environmental kind of music.
Uh-huh.
And she would play it when she was done with her sculptures. She would arrange them and then play this music for them.
Oh, wow.
And I was always like, do I need to have more of like a real relationship with my work like that? Because I'm usually like, when I'm making stuff, it feels like I'm in the trenches. Like, I'm I'm just like battling. It feels like I'm in an adversarial relationship with the work. And it feels like maybe I need to have a more gentle approach or something.
I don't know. I think that's fair. I mean, sometimes it sucks. You just go in and like you mess everything up, you know, or you're like, what is wrong today? You know, like it's my hand or the surface or whatever, you know, like just things aren't happening. I don't know. I don't think that anyone is ever feeling like 100% zenned out when they go into their studio and like just make the work. And then they're like, yeah, you know, like,
yeah.
Like, I think it's so much struggle. It's kind of, I mean, that's what makes them alive, you know, is that there wasn't just this easy thing that just sort of arose, you know, like those tantric paintings that I love so much, you know, from Rajasthan. So there's like a, you know, a tantric practice of meditation, and Margaret knew this guy, and Leonie Geyer also. This guy Frank, who passed away within the last few years, and he went to Rajasthan, I think, since like the 90s, and would collect these pieces by anonymous artists who would do like a meditation practice and then make these beautiful gouache paintings. And then like at the end, that was sort of the result of their meditation. And I don't think that they were like valued so much as an object, like, but in the West, we value them a lot. They're like the most beautiful things because they're like very clear kind of colors and shapes and arrangements. I'll send you a link. I think those are like, you know, those feel like they have that level of like exquisite sort of transcendence. I was just in we went to Finland, and I it was super great. I mean, we wanted to go there, and you know, we don't have like kids or matching furniture or anything, so we save our money and we go travel. We went to Finland. It was great. But there was this wall text in the museum that blew my mind. And I feel like, the museums there were really amazing, but there was this wall text there, and it was talking about like the experience of seeing the work. And this was about like a show about sort of abstraction And it said, a visit to an art museum can invite daydreaming and the imagining of alternate worlds, but art not need be purely escapist. It also offers ways of engaging with reality. This exhibition encourages visitors to encounter the works without seeking definitive explanations. Contemporary art can be meaningful even when it resists verbalization.
Legit.
And I'm just like, okay, could we just like make that the frame for the way we see so many things, where it's like you can just experience without feeling like it has to be understood completely or explained or, anyway, I just kind of like that it was like prefacing like the visitor's experience with, you can have an, your experience is genuine.
Yes. Well, that really reminds me of when we started this abstraction series, Maysoon and I were kind of like, if we can, well, I think at that time we were like, if we can understand abstraction, it's going to open up something in our brain and make new paths, like how they were talking about imagining alternate realities and stuff like that.
Right.
That we will, it'll crack something open and we'll be able to understand everything. And so, like, but now I think since we've been doing this stuff, I'm like, it's not about understanding.
Mm-hmm.
That's what people keep telling me. It's about having an experience. And I think that idea of, like, being able to take something in and not have to, like, formulate all this language around it or, like, you know, put it in a box that's, like, mm-hmm. you know, bite size.
Yeah.
That I think that's the real like gift of abstraction, is being able to take you away from these like limiting ways of thinking or whatever.
Yeah. But I think that's art in general too. I mean, yeah. like, I don't know, back when I was like super in love with Lucian Freud, it was like, it wasn't like, oh, I love seeing this like naked woman who's like spread out on this floor necessarily so much as, I mean, you know, much of it was really just like, I loved seeing the way that the color like played under the skin, you know, or like the thing that was supposed to be skin starting to feel like skin, you know, so yeah. It's really all, I don't know, I think like, you know, art gives us a place to like just go and feel something, and it doesn't have to be realistic or abstract, or like what you get from it is the story that is being played out. Like it can be a different story.
Yeah.
Maybe that's too easy, but I don't know. I'm like not really a reader of wall text and stuff. And sometimes I feel like the Solowit paintings, for example, like those are amazing. And like, there's so many things I love about them because I know something, like I know that people have been trained to install them, and that like there's this whole, you know, crews of people that go, and then you go and they're these like magnificent huge pieces that are kind of overwhelming but still fragile.
Yes.
And but I also, you know, like there's so much that's sort of outside of the frame of just the object itself, because I, you know, I know people have worked on them.
Yes.
Or like, you know, I've, the mood that I was in when I went to Mass MoCA, you know, the first time or something. So it's always sort of, maybe it's like a lint ball. Art is a lint ball that just keeps collecting like lots of other lint with it. And then you like have this complicated, you know, experience of it. And it's not always just the object.
Yes. Okay. So maybe I just need to accumulate more lint on some of these things. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think for me, yeah. Because, like, that's the other thing that Maysoon is trying to get me to resist, is, like, doing a lot of research about the stuff that we're looking at. Because for me, that's, like, makes it more satisfying. It's,
right.
like, knowing all this extra stuff and being able to see it in the context of when it was made and things like that. But I think Maysoon's trying to get me... I think in the last episode we talked about overthinking is underfeeling.
Yeah, but I don't, like, is there this optimized way of being? Like, are we art maxing?
Art maxing. Yes, I'm getting understanding mogged.
Yeah. You know? I don't know. I just feel like we all experience the world in so many different ways.
Yeah.
Like, I've realized how tactile I am. Like, I'll, like, like be like quote unquote looking for something in my bag, but really it's just like my hand is in there feeling for what it is.
Yeah.
And I'm not looking, but like I'm looking for something. So I just feel like we all are moving through the world in all these different ways. So it's like moving through with understanding and like curiosity about research, you know, like yeah. That seems great. I mean, there's so many amazing things to learn yeah. too about people. Who's your favorite artist
of all time?
Of this week.
Of this week.
Yeah.
Well, just because we've been thinking so, this sucks, but just because we've been thinking so much about like crying at paintings and yeah, stuff, yeah. Like the last painting I cried about was a Thomas Eakins painting.
Uh-huh.
And I thought it was at the Getty, but it was at, I think, LACMA.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just these two guys wrestling.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And like, it doesn't seem like a painting that would make you cry, but it reminds me of my drawing teacher from college. Uh-huh, and so when uh-huh. I saw it in person, it was like kind of overwhelming.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. And I love Thomas Eakins, but it kind of sucks because he was a little bit of a misogynist. And like, of course he was, because it was like the late 1800s or whenever.
Oh, yeah. Women didn't even exist at that time, right?
Yeah. He basically said that like no great sculpture or surgery will ever come from women, but like it's good to educate them anyway.
Right. Yeah.
So that's a shame. But fortunately, we proved him wrong. And
yeah. I mean, but, you know, I mean, I'm not going to get political, but I'm going to say that, like, everyone still hates women.
Well, that's a fact.
Yeah.
Isn't that a bummer?
Yeah, but, you know, then you're just kind of like, okay, whatever. You, like, fuck off, you know?
You just got to keep plugging away.
Well, it also is just, like, my existence isn't predicated on whether you like me or not.
Damn know? Right.
Like, it's... But I do just will note that, like, some things have changed and some things have stayed the same.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't know. How do you feel about that? Like, can you like art when you know the artist was a shithead?
Yeah, that's the thing. Because I also like Caravaggio.
Yeah.
And he killed somebody.
He did?
He straight up murdered someone big
time. Wow.
Yeah.
Was it a rival?
I can't remember what the situation was. I don't think the other person was a painter. I want to think that it had something to do with somebody's wife or something, but don't quote me on that.
Yeah.
The other thing I like about Caravaggio, not that I like the murder thing, but one thing I
Whoops.
Like, I know, right? One thing I like about him was apparently, again, don't quote me on this, but I think he had a hat that had candles all over it so he could paint at nighttime.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that wild? Kind of yeah. makes sense with how, like, dark and shadowy
his
stuff
totally. Is. Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah.
But, yeah, I like him. I don't know. I'm very basic. When I was learning, I went to a very, like, old school. I went to the Columbus College of Art and Design, and it yeah. was, like, very old school. Almost nobody was working in abstraction, like, all mm-hmm. the professors, and I felt like it was almost, like, looked down upon a little bit, I think.
Yeah.
It was all about, like, really representational, like, clean kind of stuff. So, yeah, like, all my favorite painters coming out of college were, like, all these old dead dudes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so... But then, you know, I got to grad school and then I was learning about Kate Hardy and like
yeah.
all these queer video artists and all these like, you know, Ron Nagel. I love his work. It's yeah. so good.
Did you work with Ron?
No, he was done by the time I got there. But because Hung was still there, she like yeah. took us to his studio and
yeah.
we got to hang out a little bit.
Oh, Hung.
The best. Yeah, and then Hung's painting was so good. And she was bringing in these, like, abstract forms and
yeah.
things into her representational work. And so I think I opened up a lot when I went to grad school. Like, abstract work and, like, weird punk work and all these things that when I was in undergrad, it felt like were not art, like, not proper art.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, there's this whole thing of like, that's easy, or like, my kid could do it, or my dog could
exactly.
do it, or whatever. And it's.
I'd like to see him try.
Yeah, totally. My dog didn't even go to grad school.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, no. But I mean, I, you know, I went to the same kind of undergrad experience. Like, but there were abstract people. But yeah, it's weird how much you get sort of focused in a way, and exposure is like the way to undo that. But yeah, it's a very strange way of teaching, you know, like those old art history books that are just like, my art history book stopped, I think, like with Jackson Pollock, maybe.
Yes, exactly. I didn't learn about contemporary art hardly at all.
Yeah.
Who are you looking at lately?
Well, I've just curated a show, so I've been looking at all those people.
Right on. Where is it?
It's going to be at 120710 in Berkeley.
Oh, does it open on the 22nd of August?
Yes. On the 22nd of August. It's from 4 to 7, and the show is called After Albers, and it takes its title from a work by John A. Futch, who is an artist from NIAID, who made this amazing piece that is based on a Joseph Albers like concentric square kind of work. Yeah, and it has 17 artists, mostly from the Bay Area, including lovely Brian Caraway, who passed away earlier this year. So there are going to be a couple of his paintings and a painting he did with his son Owen.
Oh, great.
So that is what I've been thinking about a lot, and looking at this work and really appreciating so many great people. Like, whenever you curate a show, you're like, oh, like, here's this whole horde of people, and then you're like, oh, but I could have put in like three times as many people, and then you're like, I just want to do like curating all the time. Like, you know, I love unpaid work. That's like I'm really, really, really good at like all the unpaid stuff.
Sure enough,
it's the best. Yeah. So yeah, that's where my heart lies, unfortunately, is
There's plenty of it.
There is. So. It's amazing. I've got like so many. Yeah. But so anyway, I think the show's going to be really good, because it just has a lot of really interesting people, like Jay Rivera Panza.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Whose work I saw here at all. So,
yay.
Yeah. So.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense.
Right.
The Albers connection.
Yeah.
And that's so cool to be able to kind of. That's kind of a sideways way of getting there, and that's so cool to bring that in.
Yeah, that's what I want, you know, is like, I got invited to do a show about minimalism, and I'm like, minimalism is like, you know, 50 years ago kind of thing. I like minimalism, but I kind of think like there, you know, all of those isms and ists and all that stuff have to like have like a plus or like five plus signs after it, you know, because it's like, you know, how is it transformed? How like did we absorb this and then change it into something that is now, instead of like, I could be looking at this painting from, you know, 1972, which I love, like paintings from 1972, but
here we are.
Here we are.
Many years later.
Yeah.
50 plus years later.
I know, right?
Isn't that wild?
Yeah, it's really crazy.
We're in the postmodern time.
Are we?
Is that still going on?
I think we're after. Like, I think we're in
what
the,
is
like,
past postmodern?
I don't know. But I don't think you can
Are
name
we in
the
a
time.
New thing?
Yeah.
Is it because of the fucking AI?
Oh, God. I have bad dreams about AI.
Really?
Yes, I do. And I have, in dreams, I have, like, arguments with people about AI. And like screaming arguments and, like, big breakups about, because I'm.
Like with friends?
Yeah.
I had something to add to that. Oh, well, did you hear that SF Camera Work is closing?
Jesus. Yeah.
Isn't that nasty?
It's so crazy. You know, I kind of felt like, okay, COVID is going to break a lot of things. And I guess I was just hoping it was the bad shit.
Yeah.
But it's like breaking. I mean, the it's not just like. COVID. It's like, you know, capitalism and everything is breaking everything. So it's like. All the good institutions too, you know, are going down. I mean, I will say that I think that there are a lot of amazing like 30-year-olds who are starting great projects, and like there's all these exciting project spaces, and people are like, oh, there's no art in San Francisco, and it's like, oh God, there's so much. Like, you got to get out more and see more spaces and like feel excited. That doesn't like take the place of SF Camera Work in any sort of way. I guess I'm just saying it's like the art isn't over here. It's just
you've got to keep hope alive.
Yeah. Well, there's I mean, there is also this thing of like there used to be some like art organizations, and they were so highly dependent on their one executive director that like that person would die or retire, yeah. and then everything would be, you know, you like the institution would fold,
yeah.
you know? And so I think that still is happening, that like the people who are funding these places have passed away or they're no longer interested. And, you know, the city certainly isn't giving money to the institutions to stay around.
Nope.
Yeah.
Ugh, God.
Yeah.
What are we going to do?
Oh, well, we're going to go out there and support the places that we love. And we're going to go out and make sure that we make more places that are without barriers, you know, to yeah. entry. And yeah. like that you can go and experience the things you want to experience. You don't have to pay for everything. And I don't know, like... yeah, and that like take all of your attention away from like the bad plop art, like the naked woman at the Embarcadero.
Oh my God.
I like,
you know, she's rusting. I just was there the other day where the little rivets are, whatever those things, they're rusting. So watch out, folks.
We're going to bleep this part, but yeah, I want to fucking like in
gold. Oh my God.
I fucking out. Like, I just feel like.
Have you ever seen this public sculpture in San Jose that's supposed to be like Quetzalcoatl, but it looks like a poop?
No.
I'm going to bleep that too.
We'll have like a special like outtakes. Like,
yeah, blooper reel.
Yeah, for subscribers. To congratulations, Pine Tree. You can
this
hear
is
like
how
all,
we
the,
do the Patreon.
All the hot takes.
Exactly. If you want, yeah, go to congratulationspinetree.com and smash that donate button yeah. if you want to hear the real gossip of this show.
Right.
Oh my God. Okay. We got to wind down here.
We've talked for a long time.
Okay.
Sorry.
Really good.
There's going to be a lot of editing. I'm sorry.
Oh, there always is. It's okay. Perfect. Yes. Okay. Well, we're winding down here. And so I'm going to go ahead and ask you the last question we always ask our interviewees, which is there anything else you would like listeners to know?
That they should support Congratulations Pine Tree.
Oh, thank
podcast
you so much.
Because it is the number one Bay Area arts and culture podcast.
Thank you.
And and go out to all the great nonprofit spaces that are struggling, and even showing up is like a huge donation of your time and
totally.
Your energy. And and even giving places like $10 a month is such a great way to show how much you care about them. And I don't know, you should see this show that I'm curating, because the artists are really fantastic and I'm super excited about that. I already hate this list. I you will have to edit it. Okay, start again.
It's wait, just, what list?
Oh, I'm like, oh, what people should know. I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah.
No, that's a great list.
No.
I want to shout out, like, Root Division, Southern Exposure, The Lab. Like, we still have so many great places to support. And, yeah, I think,
yeah.
you know, when we're, it is, like, terribly sad that we're losing so many places, but I think it should galvanize us to keep supporting the places that we have.
Yeah, absolutely. And then there are all these like no-profit galleries around too that we need to also support by going in and even showing up to openings and showing that we care and all
the artists. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's not easy. So I salute everybody who's getting out there. All the shy and anxious people.
Yeah, I know. It's the worst, right?
Oh my God. I'm still trying to workshop ways to make it a little... I'm wondering if we had like games.
Yeah.
Well, structure.
Yeah. I want to shout out also the Bay Area Artist Network. Like,
oh, okay.
That is fantastic.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Lindsay White's project.
Oh, Bay Area Artists Connect.
Oh, Connect. I don't know. I can't remember why. I can't remember the last
it
letter.
It is weird.
Yeah, BAAC. But anyway, yeah, like that's amazing. Like the last thing in Golden Gate Park was amazing.
Everybody get on there. I'll put a link in the underworld of where you can get on the email list. I like that it's so like lo-fi with
yeah.
being on. You have to get on the email list to get
oh,
the info.
Totally. And that it's not on Instagram.
Yeah, that's I love great. That.
It's on it's on Instagram that it's not on Instagram.
Exactly. Oh my God. Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. I think you've made abstraction a little less, you've made it a little more accessible to me, I think. As always, to you, congratulations. We're going to go ahead and say Free Palestine. And we're going to go ahead and say From the Bridge.
To the other bridge.
To the island in between. This has been Congratulations Pine Tree. Yay!